Blog Talk Radio.
Steve Austin, astronaut, a man barely alive. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Steve Austin will be that man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane!
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
It's that time again, folks. This is the Grindhouse edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. This is, of course, also the Comic Shop. The Comic Shop starts at 6 p.m. sharp. And, of course, Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk batting second at 7 p.m. All right, folks, we got a lot to get into. Let's get into our infamous and quick Nerdcore groove. When we get back, more about the comics and the pulps. We got to talk about New York Comic Con that transpired last week. Darrow, myself, and the captain, we were all in attendance. So we will discuss it, unpack it, do what we do. Also, PBS had a recent documentary entitled Superheroes, A Never-Ending Battle. We've got to talk about that. So, without further ado, getting back to the business at hand, this is the Fat Albert theme from Saturday Morning Cartoon's Greatest Hits. This is the Redux, folks. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. And again, let's groove. Dig the Fat Albert theme. Enough of that, folks. Again, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Of course, we have the Comic Shop. Without further ado, Captain, you're needed in engineering. Let's get to it.
Kaboom. Game by Activision. Let's go.
And, of course, we have the invincible, indestructible Daryl B.
Gee, thanks, Marvel Comics, for canceling Fearless Defenders. You know, it's only one of, like, the 8 books I now collect regularly. God, at least my wallet's going to be a little wider, you bleep heads.
You just screwed me up right there. Oh, wow. I had no idea that book was canceled. Wow. I can't believe it.
It ends with 12. Issue 12 will be the last.
Come on. Wait a minute. There was such a... Folks, we're talking about the Defenders. I mean, you just laid this bomb out there, Daryl. We spoke about the Defenders a few shows ago, because there was a hubbub about a lesbian character that we thought was killed off. And there was an outcry based on that. So if there's an outcry about this character, now the whole book has to go? I picked up number 10 a few weeks ago, like 2 weeks ago, I think. I bought like the last books. So I assumed that it was selling well. So what's going on here?
No, it was selling well. It's here. But the problem is, right, it's yet another book that is not white, jacked on steroids, hero, strong jaw, thing that okay, you got 12 months, that's it, you're done by. You know, it's like that. It, you know what, I can't blame them, because I thought Cullen Bunn did a great job writing the book myself, right? And I was liking it, because it wasn't the usual hero du jour, but you know what, we can scream about it all we want, you know. Folks just want their white male heroes and all the stereotypes. Let's face it. They don't want anything to break any of those.
Here we go, boy.
Well, you know,
yeah.
Okay, you know what, Daryl? We're going to talk about that a little bit. And it's going to touch on a number of different – what you just opened up is something that's been nagging at my craw for a minute. I mean, well, let's say, even since this show's inception, it's always been kind of gnawing at our craw a little bit. We've got to talk about that. And also, Daryl, I noticed a couple of things. As a matter of fact, when I saw the captain there, I made mention of this a little bit. I don't know if the captain remembers, but well, I think he does, because I was so shocked at something that happened at the convention that really debunks what you say. Even though what you say is absolutely correct, I think they're just not being creative as to how to promote and produce these properties. I'll get into more of what I'm talking about based on what I experienced. Shouting out blackactionteas.com. Again, blackactionteas.com. We got to get that guy as a sponsor, by the way, Captain.
It's an incredible
shirt. And I
got to
get him on the show.
Yes.
I'm going to talk about the show. I should have tweeted out the shirt if I didn't wear it already. I was too much like a child. Captain, where I had it. You knew I was going to wear that shirt the next day. I'll get to it. Daryl,
did he find his Black Panther? He found his Black Panther? Is this what we're talking
about
here?
Yes, it's really good, too. You have to see it if you didn't see it. You have to see it.
Daryl, I'm surprised. I will be shocked if you didn't pick up that shirt. Do you know what shirt I'm talking about?
I did not get a chance to see that booth. I was mainly confined. And it's part, one of my disappointments of the show.
Okay. You got to get into it.
Now. Let's go. Lead us in.
All right. Let's get into it. Folks, we all were in attendance at last weekend's New York Comic Con. Just as Dal and myself, and I assume the captain also, we get excited about Afropunk, which happens like a month and a half before, 2 months before this. New York Comic Con is where we all go to commiserate and to really get into what is going on with the comic book industry. You see your stars, you see your writers, you see your artists, you see your fellow fans. Now podcasters are there. Everybody's in attendance at the New York Comic Con. It's the East Coast version of the big whoop-de-doo on the West Coast, the San Diego Convention. Although, I know Reed Exhibitions, Daryl, is the company that produces the New York Comic Con. but they don't have any affiliation with San Diego. Is that correct?
Yes and no, because they pulled
kind of
the
weird,
same check. Yeah, it's a tangible connection. It's not a direct connection. But we learned that they use the same underhanded Twitter-type process, and they got called to the carpet for it. So it's not that different than San Diego, yet it's different than San Diego.
Oh, one other thing. I have to acknowledge something that Style Universal, kudos to Style Universal, welcome once again. You've been a stalwart listener. Style Universal in the chat room just acknowledged something I was unaware of. I'm pretty sure Daryl must have known this. The co-founder of Filmation Studios, the ones that have done all those, many of the DC properties that we all know and love from the late 60s and early 70s, and also Fat Albert. You know, at the end of the I remember as a kid, at the end of the cartoon, you see that circle, that circle logo with Filmation. Lou Schemer passed away yesterday, the co-founder of
yep.
Filmation Studios. So that hits me like a little bit like a ton of bricks, because that's my that's our childhood, looking at those comic book to animation. And not so comic book, I mean, because Fat Albert wasn't a comic book, but still the same thing, still the same thing. So thank you, Style Universal, for letting us know about that. I'm surprised I didn't come across that. Anyway, Daryl, with the New York Comic Con, I told the captain that one thing that kind of troubled me a bit is that, okay, we see a minority presence there. You see more each year exponentially. This thing gets bigger and bigger. What, almost 140,000 people showed up last weekend for this thing? It's a big to-do. A lot of media coverage. Whoopi Goldberg went there I don't know if they try to goof on they can't even do that. You think that they try to goof on these people now? Now I see they're somewhat shying away from it, because it's with too many of us, it's too serious, it's too much finance going on right now. Whoopi Goldberg goes there to Dan Didio for The View. Dan Didio is the prez of DC Comics, DC Entertainment. And she was kind of coyly talking about, how do you pitch a comic book or a comic book movie? So it's too serious. It's too, even though they try to hint at poking fun at the nerds and the geeks, they really can't do that anymore. But one thing that I did notice that kind of bothered me a bit is that when you do see the minority representation at these conventions, and I might have mentioned it last year, but it was more pronounced this year, there's so many women, so many folks of color. Even you see some of the queer folk in attendance now. I'm assuming they're queer, because some of them, be that as it may, I'm trying to be careful here, it looked like they were in attendance, posing their ethnicity, their gender, on the white archetypes. And I sat there, I said, you're still seeing black Supermen, black Captain Americas. We got to get our own thing, Daryl. We've got to get our own presence. That's something that there's something going on where we have to co-opt and graft ourselves on white heroes. What's up with that? Still.
Well, you forgot the two major ones. All right, the two major ones this year was there were a lot of black male and female Cyclopses. There are a lot of, I saw this black woman with the original Cyclops costume. It was absolutely positively awesome, right? And the other one that made was big, and not many people mention it, black people love Jubilee. I saw three or four different styles of Jubilee with black females in the role. I was like, hey, that's cool. I saw the vampire version. I saw the X-Men cartoon version. Not X-Men Evolution, not Wolverine and the X-Men, the original X-Men cartoon. Well, not Pride of the X-Men, but you get what I'm saying. The 90s X-Men cartoon version, Jubilee, there was a couple black girls rocking that. a lot of Asian girls rocking that too. So, you know, that's cool. All right. My thing is, and Fearless Defenders, what I said in the opening leads into this point, okay? If the book doesn't have a chance to succeed, then how are we going to get the heroes? You're not going to give the book a chance. And I'm not even saying the business should, because like Captain will point out, right, with these books, all right, you need to sell. But I see enough people online always saying, oh, there needs to be more this, there needs to be more that. Oh, you see, they don't, oh, when the book comes out, what are they doing? You know what, I'm not buying it. I'm sticking with my this and my that and the same old stuff. You cry to high heaven that you want diversity, but you stick with the same stuff. You don't give the books a chance, all right? That's why I love these shows, because, you know, if people cried about the new Harlequin costume, cried about the new direction, the new 52. I stood out there interviewing people, and guess what? Like, on the Thursday, 40% of the girls were dressed as Harlequin. I am not lying. They took their own, like, 50-member group photo. And I'm like, well, so much for that. All them arguing about how the new Harlequin costume sucks, and because half of them were dressed that way. You know? I saw a whole bunch of Deadpools. Awesome. But there's an example of a character who is given a chance to latch on. But, you know what? Here's the problem. He's essentially a white hero. They gave him a chance. Even with low sales with him in the beginning, they gave him a chance, and he latched on. No love. That's the way I look at it. No love. No love, and comic book fans are hypocrites. Yes, I said it. Hypocrites. You know? Not all of us stand by our beliefs in this. And you know what? I'm guilty of it, too, with some books. Because there's some books I buy out of blind loyalty that I know the quality suffers. But at the same time, if you're going to outpour and get mad and say we need this, okay, and you see how much Asian, Latin, Afrocentric, Arabian, you see how much these fans dedicate to these characters during these shows. And you know what? Don't let me leave out the Caucasian, because, you know, Caucasian, all the fans that decide to do the costumes, whether it looks ugly or whether it looks brilliant, they put their time, their effort, and their love of the character into those costumes, you know? And these are the fans we need to be making books for. The problem is the very same fans yell out and cry out and want this and I want that and I want this and I want that. And then you give it to them and they don't support it. And the captain's right. It's one of the things that set me off. It was seeing that Fearless Defenders got canceled. Set me off when I sat in on some of those panels and didn't hear about more diversity. Didn't hear about more changes.
Gary, hold on, because I want the captain to come in. You're kind of breaking up a little bit. Try to see if you can work your audio a little bit. Captain, you were there. What were your thoughts? What were your impressions of New York Comic Con, the expansiveness of it, things you noticed, things you thought were a little off kilt? What were your thoughts?
Okay.
As an observer.
Now, can you hear me? How do I sound?
Yeah.
Sound good? All right.
Yeah.
Now, I have to give the normals. The reason why you're called normals now is because if you were a Uber being like us here at the comic shop, you would have been there. So if you were not there, I'm calling you a normal. So you normals, that's what you are. I have to give you the gravity view, like the movie, the panoramic vision of the Comic-Con, which really should really drop off the comic part, and it should be Cosplay-Con, Now, let's start. Let's talk about the security with the bomb-sniffing dogs. Now, let's understand something. Most security, yes, they had bomb-sniffing dogs at Comic-Con. Now, most security, unbeknownst to the listener, is just a PR stunt. How so, Captain? Let me explain. If you want to bring in a bomb to Comic-Con, you dress up like a police officer. They don't frisk you. The dog is not going to come by you, and you bring in a bomb. That's how professionals do it. If you want to blow up the airport, you dress like the TSA worker, or you dress like some any other worker, and you go in. That's how it's done. If you want to bring a gun into a club, you don't walk by security. You go to the club during the day. You dress up like a regular person. You act like you're going to be a delivery or what have you, and you put it in the bathroom or something like that, or in a vet. How do I know this? Because I found a gun in a club during the daytime before. It was a 25 pistol. What was it doing in there? Obviously, someone planted it to do something in the club. So anyway, I know a little something about security. But one thing that the security did do, see, you have to understand the geeks and nerds. The geeks and nerds are not violent people. That's for you thugs. They don't do violent crime. That's beneath them. They will steal a comic book, and they will counterfeit passes. Yes, last year, the counterfeiting of Comic-Con passes was crazy. It was off the chain. Now, you had to have your Comic-Con pass tap into their computer. It's a scan to get in. And also, in order to leave, you had to do the same thing. Amazing. This cut down on the counterfeiting. Now, next, going forward, speaking to the exhibitors, they said, hey, the cosplay aspect is great, but cosplay people do not buy comics. It's nice to walk around. It's a great pop event, but we sell comics in these small venues, as Darryl would say, where the real geeks, the real nerds, the real people who know comic books, this is where they make their money. This is where they get together, the back room doors and things like that. He said, in these type of events, you don't really sell comics, but it's nice. You have to do it. It's really, as I said before, a pop event. Comic-Con has become a pop event. And if you're a comic distributor, comic seller, reseller, you have to do it. You just have to do it. Even though you're pissed off because of the long day, you're not really selling the comics that you should be selling. Other people there who are selling T-shirts and doing those type of things, the food and other aspects, paraphernalia, they're doing well. But the comic book sellers, according to them, not according to me, according to them, they say, it's not good at all. It's not good at all. So Comic-Con overall, from my perspective, it's something worth seeing, something worth doing. You have to be part of it if you're into this pop event. And you're into the pop event whether you're a diehard geek nerd or you're just a casual person who goes to see the Avengers. So it's something worth going to. Cosplay all the way out, not really Comic-Con. It's cosplay, 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 cosplay. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
All right. Listen, let's go to a quick nerdcore groove for a few moments. And when we get back, I'm going to give you my impressions of my experiences at New York Comic Con. I was not prepared a game, essentially. I'm just not prepared. I sat in on a couple of panels, but I always feel like I missed something. And Friday was more comfortable to walk around. I'll give you that much. Friday's more comfortable. But as far as cosplay is concerned, I did not get the full brunt of that. You have to go on Saturday, I think. The people that really want to be seen, the people that really look close to the characters, the gorgeous models, they're there on Saturday and maybe Sunday. Friday I saw wannabes. I saw obese Wonder Women. Be that as it may.
Yeah, when we come back, I will say why last year's was much better than this year's.
I think so. Folks, quick nerdcore groove. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. This is JF Crates, J.F. Crate's Knowledge is Power, isn't it? We'll be right back.
It's a philosopher's stone.
Knowledge is power.
You don't know how much you boys mean to me.
Open your mind. Search for knowledge. And do it for a purpose. That's what we're here for. Yeah. 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 Check me out. This is Psyche 360. J.F. Crate, if you ain't heard of us. Yeah. Yow. Yeah. Cypher transmutation, calculation, making circles. Ish ballin' niggas study hard to make reversals. If you in my cypher, be glad to be where you stand. We the type of dudes who create new things with our bare hands. My hair's so long, I keep it in a ponytail. Hoes love to fill up on me in my auto mail. But I got a main joint at home, my girl Winry. When the struggle breaks me down, she the one that fixes me. I travel around the whole world in search of new information. The portal of truth, my brother's soul is in there waiting. So I'm innovating and I take science to bigger places. So education is the only way I get creative, Black jeans, red jacket, yes I'm swagging. Got the best fashion and a nigga never matching. If you think that I'm a nerd and try to fight me, let it happen. I'm too fast with the hands, punchlines when I'm rapping. Real ass nigga till I'm buried and I'm in the military. When I get my body back, me and Winry getting married. Say goodbye to you fools, it's what I'm trying to do. I'll be at the top of the world, I'll be at pi over two. And I think I know a thing or two. Because I am smart, I know the whole world is only equal to the sum of its parts. So the world is a big life form, it lives and breathes. I'ma tap into its soul using alchemy history. I'm with a group of soldiers whose souls live eternal. I transmuted a rap group with a basic perfect circle. In the search of knowledge, me and my squad only grind. Wandering and pondering like Von Hohenheim. On this lonely stride, weakens my body over time. Seeking the calls and the cries of each of the commoners who died. Supernatural power does exist if you're concerned. Logically, cause knowledge power, and there's always more to learn.
I take it you're here to retrieve your brother? Just how do you plan on pulling an entire human out of here? What's your payment?
Yeah.
I'd work hard till I'm dead and give an arm and a leg for my brother. To get back all the parts of him that left, and it starts in my head. This struggle is mental. I put a soul in your body with another instrumental. Give a flow to your chakra as a function of my pencil. Take you to new places. Train of thought as my vessel. Hold my dreams and ambitions tight in a metal fist. I'm like Thomas Edison, how I keep inventing shit. I'm an alchemic, chemic, military weapon kid who be schooling all my enemies. And then I let him live. Full metal engineer trying to transmute a soul. And I got a small circle. Me and my mans move alone. This universe is endless. It's full of miracles. To make impossible happen, just rearrange its material. That's what it means to be a true alchemist. Take the world we live in and make something better out of it.
Folks, you know, I detest the N-word, even in a rap disc called Knowledge is Power. I will have to play Childish Gambino, Donald Glover next, I think. Anyway, again, J.F. Crate's Knowledge is Power. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Talking about last weekend's New York Comic Con, New York Comic Convention. Of course, Daryl B. and Captain Kirk are in attendance. What I wanted to say, first of all, I was very excited about running into a seller that I became aware of online, blackactionteas.com. I would implore our listenership to definitely check this young man out. Black Action Tees is exactly what it is, blackactionteas.com. And I was able to pick up, and I will tweet out the photograph of the T-shirt that I purchased. It was a T-shirt that had the 1966 Batman TV show logo. For those who are aware, I mean, you have to know about this TV series. Iconic, campy TV series. Adam West, Burt Ward, And at the beginning of the animated part of the live-action TV series, the animated intro, the bow, wang, bang part of it, you see the Batman logo clearly, where you see Batman's head, you see his cape, and he, as he opens up the cape, you see Batman. At Black Action Tees, he has the same logo, but the logo has the Black Panther's head on top of it, and as the cape opens up, instead of Batman, it says Panther. I had to get this thing. Now, what got me was I'm going to a booth called Black Action Tee, Daryl, and I'm okay. looking at this thing. So I'm saying, okay, I got to get this. You know, I'm a big fan. You know, we grew up, at least I grew up on the reruns of the 66 thing. We may not want the 66 series to be seen for 2013, but it's part of the history. So I'm there buying the T-shirts. Oh, I got to get that. And I see white comic book fans going to Black Action Tees, picking up swag, as they say, picking up that specific T-shirt. So at first I'm thinking, okay, this is just going to be a black thing in my head. But when I'm actually there buying for this young man, there were white fans in attendance as well, buying black pop culture goods. Again, buying black pop culture goods. So the whole premise that we can't sell products that have women on the cover, we can't sell products that have black folk or Latin or Asian folk on the cover, that can easily be debunked. It's about how you approach it. It's about the quality of the product. It's about how you promote the product. And I hope folks come out for this Fearless Defenders thing, maybe tweet out, maybe get something going on and not just rolling over on this thing. I'm looking online. There's folks that are upset about it, obviously. But Defenders, you know, I'm hearing complaints that have really nothing to do with the book. It's more about, well, the price went up. Someone said they let go of the book when the book went up to $4. That's a consideration. Pricing of these books. Someone wrote in, said they weren't comfortable with the quality. The quality was hit or miss. Some issues were good. Some issues were a little shaky. The covers were excellent. The covers of the comic book, that was mentioned quite a bit, that the look of the book, which drew me in, actually, and also the book had, it shadowed Buffy the Vampire Slayer for me. To me, I looked at it as a book, because now I look at books, I don't know about now, but I look at these books as potential series in some way. They're so cinematic now, maybe more so than ever. If I looked at a 1985 Avengers, I didn't necessarily feel cinematic about it. I mean, not necessarily. But now that these books are being green-lighted, after reading Hickman's run on New Avengers and some of the Infinity work, the reading of the book, the artwork, as I said before, it's cinematic. This week's New Avengers comic that has my favorite character, Black Panther, and Wakanda and everything kind of full frontal, it is like looking at a movie. So it's really, how good are these products? How are we promoting them? Are we getting the word out? We seem to kind of get emotionally attached once it's all said and done. Now that it's canceled, now everyone is screaming. But where were we to support the book, to get the word out, so the book doesn't get canceled? But the convention, again, I went on a Friday. Far more comfortable day to go as far as walking around. If you go on a Saturday, which I've done before, Saturday is a madhouse. You are literally, it's like walking through glue on Saturday. But if you want to see some stuff, Saturday appears to be the day. It's just, can you get in it? Can you get into some of these panels? Can you see some of these people? I don't know, because Friday is a day to walk around comfortably. Saturday, Sunday, it's so popular that I couldn't get a Saturday ticket. I was only able to get a Friday ticket. The multiple day tickets were sold out. So I think I might have had a better time last year than this year. You know, it's kind of a weird thing, I think. But I enjoyed myself to a certain degree, but I just wish I had more time It takes time to really get through these to see everything you need to see, to really ingest everything. It's such a assault on your senses. You know, you sometimes you're just so overwhelmed going to a convention. It's hard to concentrate. Daryl, any closing thoughts on that? And also about what I said about Black Action Tees, that you are seeing multiracial folk buying black product if it's presented. If you see it, they buy it.
Well, firstly, apologies to contributor Mr. David Walker. You know, with the hustle and bustle and everything, I didn't get a chance to go over there. And it was just too much for me. I actually suffered sensory overload, but not in the good way. I will say it like that, being totally, totally truthful, because there were points where, okay, I'm freed up. Let me see how many industry insiders and thing I could go talk to. And then by the time I take a couple of steps, here comes the mad crush of the crowd again. You know, I don't know if I could say it's about the venue or just the pop culture aspect, but you couldn't get to do everything. But at the same time, you know, and this, I know this will change for next year, because next year is the 75th anniversary of the Bat, I believe. So it's going to be crazier next year. But I felt in past years I was able to check out a whole bunch of panels, a whole bunch of screenings, you know, all of that. This year didn't feel that way. I felt suffocated. Let's put it that way, right? And I'm kind of disappointed because I didn't, you know what, and it's on me too. I did not plan this one as well as I should. You know, I'll put it that way. But I did get to meet guys like Brian Cronin from Comic Book Resources, the guys over at Blind Ferret who are behind Least I Can Do. You know, I got to meet some folks, but not as many as I wanted to. And that Sergeant Slaughter I got to meet. You know, I don't know how to plan it. I'll tell you the truth. I don't know how to plan it anymore, because I want to do what the captain says. I want to go there and get comics. Right? But at the same time, I also want to meet some insiders, find some information, relay stories, you know, and do all of that. You know, your moment at Black Con.
Daryl, I think he broke up. All right, Daryl, if you're listening, you're going to have to call back in because something happened where you broke up completely. Okay, he's coming. Okay, he dropped off. He'll call back in. Somehow these things happen, folks. Again, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. At 7 p.m., of course, we have Afro-Nerd Radio. Now you are listening to the Comic Shop. Feel free to contribute if you like. The water is warm. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We're just wrapping up, discussing our experiences at this year's Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con. Let me bring Daryl back in. Daryl, if you could kind of give an annotated version of what you were talking. You broke up.
Well, I was just saying, what you had at Black Comic Tees, I didn't have this year. That kind of experience, I didn't have. And I was ending it on the whole black T-shirt, white shopper type of thing. I equated to Morrison's X-Men. And people are like, what? Where you had, like, white suburban kids wearing the Magneto Was Right T-shirt? You know, like, why would regular human kids be wearing the Magneto Was Right? Because it's kitsch. It's great. It looks cool. Look how cool I am wearing the Black Panther on the Batman symbol T-shirt. I guarantee none of my friends have that. Well, if you ask them to support a book. Okay, that's going too far. I'll take the one-time statement. I won't support a whole book. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
You might be onto something. I mean, listen, I bought the book for the same reason, but I support Black Panther. So, you know, I come full circle with it. But I have to say that I was very happy to see that. Because my thing is, and actually I spoke to the gentleman that runs Black Action Tees, and he's willing to come on the show, so we're going to get him on momentarily real soon. And also doing some kind of promotional kind of thing also with him. And we spoke briefly about the fact that there is a African-American presence at these conventions. I've mentioned it before. Whereas years ago when myself and Mr. Stark would be 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds at the comic conventions at that time, before they were these big pop culture events, we were like flies swimming in milk at that time. Not so much now. Definitely not so much now. But the key component is if people of all ethnicities are willing to buy black pop culture product, what are we doing to really coalesce everyone, essentially creating a hub? What are we doing to make sure that we're able to disseminate and facilitate a means to put out this product? You can't have someone with Black Action Tees doing it by himself. He can be a sponsor on our show where I am helping to get the word out. Perhaps we could do something with him. Maybe there's an Afro Nerd shirt that can be made. Whatever. There's got to be a way where we start to build together to create and to really – this is what Afro Nerd is all about in its totality. This is not just about comic books, but it's about the promotion of black pop culture as a solid thing. There is such a thing. This convention is a for-profit convention. You have to remember, this is a for-profit convention, whereas San Diego is non-profit. So we've got to get in on the game. And the fact that it's not just a black thing per se. It is a black thing, but other people are willing to imbibe if it's presented in a certain way so it could be ultimately successful. So we'll do it again next year, folks. Like Daryl said, I've got to be better prepared. You're just never ready for this thing. It's such a assault to the senses. You're almost spending like 20 minutes just spinning around babbling like an idiot because you don't know what to do. There's just too much going on. Too much going on. All right. Moving right along. Actually, before we get into the PBS documentary, which I thought was a pretty good one, although Daryl and myself, the captain to a lesser degree, we breathe this stuff, so it's really repeated information. But for those who have very little knowledge about the comic book world, it's a good intro. It was a three-hour documentary, I believe this past Tuesday, October 15th, by PBS, Public Broadcasting Station, and it's entitled Superheroes, a Never-Ending Battle, and it really gives you, it encapsulates the history of the comic and the history of superheroes more specifically. It's also available online for a brief, I think up until the end of this month. If you missed it on PBS TV, you can check it out at pbs.org, pbs.org/superheroes. But before we even get into that, I'm hearing that I guess even as we're broadcasting, they are filming Man of Steel 2 in Las Vegas. Did you hear about this, Daryl?
Well, they're filming some scenes. It's one of the ones that has continued filming. You know, hey, you know what? They're getting an early jump. They're following one part of the Marvel method. Let's get on it. Let's strike while the iron's hot. Now let's see how well they follow through with this.
Well, I know more specifically, it's a scene involving a faux football match, a faux college football match between the Metropolis college team versus the Gotham college team. And they actually have, I think there's even T-shirts out there. They have the jerseys that are out there. If you go to comicbookmovie.com or just Google this, you can simply Google and find out what the jerseys look like. But it is a football spectacle, a football game with these two, I guess, to emphasize, you know, the versus element of this movie, Batman versus Superman, Metropolis versus Gotham. So I can't say I'm not excited. I'm just worried. I'm worried this thing is going to suck. Because, you know, I mean, I know David Goyer, the writer of this movie, also a noted comic book writer and TV writer. Do you think, I mean, they're talking about 2014 and, you know, I mean, how good is this thing going to be being that it's really being rushed? I don't know if anything is good when it's rushed.
And
what are your thoughts on that, Darryl?
They essentially did the same thing in Dark Knight Rises. Do we need another football scene? Could you get another sport? You know, and I'm an NFL nut. I'm watching college football as I'm doing this show right now. I'm a football nut. But we're hearing that, all right? I'm like, okay, you're repeating yourself from Dark Knight Rises. You know, that's the first thing that comes to my mind. Now, the normal fan won't be thinking that, but me, I'm like, okay, we're doing this element again. Wow. Way to be inventive. But, like I said, the positive is they're getting a jump on it. They're getting these scenes in the can. It could always be tailored, you know. But they are following through. It's not just all hot air. There's the positive, Warner Brothers. Don't say it. They never give you anything. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Oh, one other thing. I see Dre Smith, gentleman coming in the chat room. He says, fellas, you should highlight more black-owned comic books. Actually, Harlem Shadow we did discuss. The Harlem Shadow we did discuss. Isn't that affiliated with Russell Simmons? I think Russell
mm-hmm.
Simmons has a Harlem Shadow. And actually, we discussed another, the Black Sherlock Holmes book.
Watson Holmes.
Yeah, so we do discuss,
which,
I mean, this is a black show.
Four came out last week, folks. Four came out last week, and the first trade is supposed to be the first week of December. If you've missed any of the first three issues and stuff like that, the first trade, I believe, is the first week of December.
And, you know, also, we know, Darryl, we've got to make a concerted effort to go to the museum in Harlem that had the Stromberg that had the their Black Comic Convention earlier this year. So we also there's the noted one that's in Philadelphia also. Isn't that correct? They have a Black comic book convention as well.
Yep, I believe it. Did it happen this year? Like, I believe it happened in September. I'm thinking it's always a month, 6 weeks ahead of New York Comic Con. So, you know what we need? We just need, like, in January or February, someone to come out with a big calendar of events for comic book fans. And that way we can plan this stuff. I'm just saying it out there. Anybody there enterprising out there, you know, gather all the information up and create a calendar where I don't have to plan this 2 weeks before the event.
Oh, and pardon me, folks. I must be going through some missing ginseng. Schomburg, pardon me. The Schomburg from Arturo Schomburg, the noted historian, Schomburg Museum, the legendary Schomburg Museum, they had a comic book convention that I found out at the last moment. I had actually intended to go to that Black Comic Con. So we are seeing pockets of folks trying. I mean, the Black Comic Convention in Philadelphia is a pretty regular event. I guess, you know, we've talked about this before. It just seems that we have to be better, you know, as far as, like, our heroes. And what we talked about before, it seems like we imprint ourselves. There's black archetypes, or just black-faced white archetypes is what I'm basically saying. That's one thing that kind of...
Or white-faced black archetypes? Either way, you know, it's more comfortable for the masses to have a white hero with black overtones, Bill Clinton, than actually have a black hero doing the same thing, Barack Obama. You know, it's comfortable for the masses
well,
to have a white.
Well, Darryl, I'll tell you something. You're encroaching on Afro Nerd Radio territory, but we spoke about this before, is that we have levied more critique, even as black folk, against Barack Obama for his blackness, who is a black person, whereas Bill Clinton, we lent him. We leased him blackness, and we were less critical of Bill Clinton.
Well,
We leased him blackness, and we have yet to revoke that lease.
Well, and it's something we'll get into on bigger shows, all right? It's great that we're so critical about stuff that hits close to home, all right? In terms of blackness, in terms of geekness, in terms of science fiction and fantasy. But the problem we have is we over-criticize. We nick and kill and kill this stuff and don't give it a chance to grow. All right? So then when it gets killed and it's off the air, when the career gets killed and they're not in the major eye, when the politician gets killed and they're not supporting us, okay, you can't then turn around and say, you know what we need? We need a major black politician. You know what we need? We need a major black TV show. You know what we need? We need a major nerd this. We need this. We need this. You had it and you killed it without giving it a chance to grow. And that pisses me off. Captain?
Yeah, well, you know, listen, we were fortunate enough to interview the late Dwayne McDuffie. And, you know, I was really pained when he passed on because he was a relatively young person. And also what he really meant to black representation in mainstream comics. I'm listening to Dre Smith. I think what he's saying is very important. I'm not going to disagree with him. And we do our part here in emphasizing all of what's happening in black in comicdom, including the black representation. My only complaint about what happens in black representation is we've got to be more original. I just see that we have, as I said before, we seem to be interpreting what has been laid out by by the white creators. Like the fact that there is a Watson Holmes. I mean, I picked up the book, and it has, you know, it's Harlem, it's, you know, but it's still a black interpretation of a white intellectual property. Where's the originality? You know, Kevin Gravel, who we didn't really highlight. I'm going to work on getting him on the show as well, Darryl. The gentleman that wrote The Underworld, wrote the screenplay for The Underworld series, and actually I should have known this. He is behind I, Frankenstein. I think he has an I, Frankenstein comic book also. So he's behind I, Frankenstein. I mean, you can tell by the look of I, Frankenstein that it's pretty much in the Underworld world. He came out recently and said that we need to get more black folk involved in science fiction. And that's the problem. You know, we're making slave films, not to disparage 12 Years a Slave, which we'll talk about momentarily as well. That's out this weekend, and 12 Years will be out in wide release November 1st. But to continuously see black folk in slave garb again, and we need, listen, that is the paradox. And I was telling the captain about this behind the scenes. You know, you need to see slavery films because you have generations of people of all ethnicities that still are unaware of what happened in this country, how this country was built, and the suffering that took place on the part of African Americans, people of color, who were enslaved. But at the same time, we've got to be about superheroes. We've got to be about scientists. We've got to be about sci-fi. We've got to be about fantasy. We've got to be about the whole deal, a whole balance.
Uh-oh.
Appreciate some.
There
hello?
He is. Yeah, you popped out for a second.
Yeah, what I was saying was, with the balance, you might be able to appreciate the slavery films a bit better. But if it's a one-note pony, a one-trick pony, you lose me at some point.
That's why I'm loving Sleepy Hollow. That's why I'm loving Totally Biased. All right, I'm loving that we're taking steps and getting out a little bit more. But the problem is that you hear it from our community. All right, I know you guys have heard it too. We don't belong here. Who doesn't belong here? You know? Oh, this ain't our thing. What isn't your thing? Are you even giving the concepts a chance? Are you even letting, you don't know. But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't just go for black. It doesn't just go for ethnicity. It goes for geek and nerd thing. You like some of the concepts. You don't embrace the lifestyle, if you catch my drift. Hey, that's a great story, but you know what we'll do to it? We'll add these teen white people into the story. We'll change the location from Tokyo to New York, and we'll still call it the same thing. Killer looking at you, you know?
Well, listen, quickly.
You know? Go ahead.
Well, quickly, you know, I had an experience in Afropunk, and I love Afropunk. Afropunk, it's a similar feeling that I have going to New York Comic Con, where you are there with your people, so to speak. You know, the Comic-Con, you're there with the nerds. Afropunk, you're with these avant-garde. Also, there's a crossover appeal, I think, because at Afropunk.com, they also had their little coverage of New York Comic-Con. And there are, you know, Vernon Reed, the lead guitarist for Living Color, he is a self-avowed comic book nerd. And who would think a rock guitarist would have an interest in comic books per se, but having said that, when I was there, there was some goofy girl that came up to me, kind of just like dancing around me. I guess I have that look with, and I told Kath this all the time. Someone's always coming up to me for whatever reason. So she comes up to me and starts kind of dancing in a goofy way, and I thought she was just being playful. And then she says to me, "They need to make this. This should be more black." This, you know, they should be, you know, when are they going to be acting more black here? And I looked at her and said, you're kidding, right? I mean, you're kidding. She said, no. I said, what? Now, what that meant was, this was a majority black affair playing rock music, but she as a black person felt that, well, this really isn't my thing. It wasn't black enough for her comfort level. And that's the problem. Some things just aren't for certain people, Darryl. This is the whole thing is, white folks are allowed to have a myriad of different viewpoints, representations, music. They're allowed to express themselves fully. With us, there's this constant need to box us in. This is a solely black thing, and that's it. One definition. Even by some black folks, they believe in that. So Afropunk, if you're not into Afropunk, that's fine. But that doesn't mean that Afropunk shouldn't get its day, shouldn't get its highlight, shouldn't be known to the rest of the populace. And we got a minute, unfortunately. All right, we have to talk about. Go ahead, Darryl. Quickly.
Quickly in a minute. Death was on Totally Biased. I just saw the documentary for the first time. A Band Called Death. Highly recommend it. All right. And to the writers in the thing, I will be doing more black comic highlighting in the coming weeks. I got a couple of projects I have my eye on. Back to you, guys.
Sounds good. I think we'll all have to get on top of that. But we do, here and there, do discuss black subject matter. I mean, as far as subject matter, we do get into that. Folks, we're going to go next door. Dow, as always, we appreciate your support. We're going to go next door.
Enjoy,
to
guys.
AfroNerd featuring Kathy Kirk. And we have a lot more to discuss in pop culture, believe it or not. See you in a few moments. It's been real.
Spock with a beard?
I think not. Yes, he would.
You know the damage one ignorant Negro can do. We were in France in the First War. We had won decorations. But the white boys had told all them French gals that we had tails. Then they found this ignorant colored soldier. Paid him to tie a tail to his ass and run around half naked making monkey sounds. They put him on a big round table in the Café Napoleon. Put a reed in his hand. Crown on his head. Blanket on his shoulders and made him eat bananas in front of all them Frenchies. Oh, the white boys danced that night. Passed out leaflets with that boy's picture on it. Called him Moonshine. King of the monkeys. And when we slit his throat, do you know that fool asked us what he had done wrong?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a logic.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Welcome, folks. This is the second half. This is Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afro Nerd Radio. The call-in number, once again, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Listen, we're going to go to a quick psychedelic soul, urban alternative, black rock, Afro-punk groove. You know, we do something quite different here at Afro-Nerd. So we're going to play you a type of music that is just not getting the airplay that it deserves. So we will give it to you fresh, as always, here at Afro-Nerd Radio. So once we get to the groove, we'll also get to the discourse. This is, I would say, she's unabashedly the queen of psychedelic soul. This is Janelle Monáe with a friend, His Royal Badness. I've played it before. This is Giving Them What They Love, Janelle Monáe and Prince. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. And again, let's groove.
Shopper.
giving them what they love. Again, Janelle Monáe, Prince, from the Electric Lady MP3. All right, folks, without further ado, let's get to it. Captain, you're needed in engineering. What's going on?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Yeah, we have 12 years a slave, but how many years are we going to be a victim? Something to think about.
Yeah, that was a serious tone, wasn't it?
Yes.
We have a lot to get into, Captain. Again, folks, this is Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, the second half of the Grindhouse edition of our show, the double feature show. Couple of things. One, Captain, you sent an article to my attention from the HuffPost, and it was entitled, Why We Think Black People Feel Less Pain Than White People and How It Affects Society. And I thought that was a pretty interesting piece. But before we even get to that, I want to talk about something that pained me. I guess I would be part of that same pain somewhat. We were talking about 12 Years a Slave, the director, the black British director, Steve McQueen's latest effort, getting a lot of accolades. Already there's Oscar talk. They're already prepared to give this Chiwetel Ejiofor, I hope I'm pronouncing the young man's name correctly, the lead actor. They already seemingly want to give him the Oscar for his portrayal of a real-life character that was, which makes this an interesting piece, is that he was a free man during the slavery period and was captured, and hence the title 12 Years a Slave. My only issue with it, and actually I had intended to see this thing this weekend because it premiered this weekend, but it's in limited release, and the theater that we normally go to, which is really to my comfort level, really to my comfort level, where you can lay back, literally lay back, everything's big, it's reserved seating. I've just grown accustomed to this theater, Captain. It's not going to be there till November 1st, so I'm going to have to wait till November 1st to really give my opinion on the piece. But what I did tell you is that since I'm looking at some of the write-ups on 12 Years a Slave, and you're looking at the actors, you're looking at them in costume, it's just something is nagging at my craw, Captain. Something is nagging at me where in the 21st century we are still seeing a common meme of black folk. If it's not the civil rights era as far as cinematic depictions, you know, where we are the focal point, where a black person is the focal point, it's either going to be the civil rights period or it's going to be slavery. There's nothing before that. There's nothing in between that. And there's nothing after that. And that's what disturbs me, that you know, we're getting awards for playing if we're not getting awards, we're getting notoriety. Sometimes we will win. If we don't win, we will still get notoriety for playing lower echelon characters. Whether it's Hard Out Here to Be a Pimp, where we saw that song, 3-6 Mafia got an award for the music in the film. What was the name of that film, Captain, with Terrence Howard? Kind of evades me right now. Anyway. We're still seeing that Halle Berry played a downtrodden woman that was whose husband was played by Sean Combs, was executed, and the executioner played by Billy Bob Thornton, she falls in love with. We're seeing maids. You know, Hattie McDaniel won an award, the famed actress in 1940, for the 1939 portrayal of a maid in Gone with the Wind in 1939. She got the award in 1940, Captain. What am I missing? something is wrong when we're talking about 75 years now, 70 plus years, and we're still playing or getting notoriety for playing maids. I forgot the butler. Lee Daniels, the butler, that received notoriety. I mean, everyone is willing to really roll out the red carpet, literally, when we're still being perceived as chauffeurs. We forgot about Morgan Freeman's portrayal of the chauffeur in Driving Miss Daisy in 1989. I mean, we are captains of industry. We are presidents. We're mayors. We're newly crowned senators, shouting out Cory Booker. I mean, where's that story? Where's that story, Captain? What do you?
Well, the thing it seems like you're complaining about is that there's not a self-contained infrastructure within the black community that allows these multifaceted things that you want done to be able to be done. You're still going to the powers that be in order to do anything that you want to do. So essentially, this is the end result of that. As long as there's not an infrastructure within the black community in order to do the many different lanes that we always talk about, this is what's going to happen. And that's the reality of it. But some of these movies we actually do need, like a movie such as 12 Years a Slave, which is historical, supposed to be historical. Movies like that you need. You know, some of these other movies I don't think we necessarily need. That's why I didn't go out and see them and support them, but, you know, that's one I will be going to see. That's really what you're complaining about. So, in essence, we just need to do better and greater at this so we could channel it on both sides. Some of us go over to the other side, which is the powers that be, do some movies over there, and a lot of us in many different lanes do movies over on this side where we have the sci-fi, where we also maybe have the butler, we have the minstrel, and we also have the president, the stockbroker, the person that owns the investment firm. Then also you can have all of that and also have the thug. You see, those are all different lanes. So there you have it. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, because, listen, I'm going to support this film because I know that Steve McQueen, not the actor from the 60s and 70s, not that iconic actor, but the black British director, Steve McQueen, he's making some noise for his portrayal, for his filmmaking, his film work. Also, Q-Storm, Hustle and Flow. Thank you for that. Terrence Howard was in. Terrence Howard almost performed His Heart Out Here Like a Pimp, unless, if I'm led to believe correctly, I believe Sidney Poitier pulled him to the side. If folks remember, more than 10 years ago, you had a triple threat with Sir Sidney receiving an Academy Award. Denzel received it as well as Halle Berry that year. So it was a historical year. But he pulled Mr. Howard to the side and said, hey, you may not want to go there with performing that song. If what I heard is to be believed, that he pulled to the side and said, do not perform that song. So you're right. The infrastructure is not there. Not, it is and it isn't. But we should be exploring it more. We should be building upon it more. We mentioned in the last show, in the comic shop, that screenwriter Kevin Graveau, who's a big dude. I saw him, I think, 2 years ago at the last comic convention, maybe a few conventions ago, New York Comic Con conventions ago, 2 years ago. Big dude. He has a scientific background. I think he studied microbiology at Howard, if I'm not mistaken. And then he went into his calling. He was into comic books. I believe Dwight McDuffie hasn't had a scientific or engineering background. So you have a number of smart black folk that if pressed, they can do the damn thing. But they need the support, Captain. They need, as you said, they do need the infrastructure. But I'm becoming a little concerned that, you know, 70 years later, we're still on this theme. But Kevin Graveau had mentioned that, you know, he's coming out with I, Frankenstein coming out at the top of next year. And he said we need more black folk in science fiction. You know, who is interpreting Olivia Butler's works, a famed black female science fiction writer who's interpolating her work for film. Something is going on. You know, there are stories out here besides slavery and civil rights. Not that they cannot be told, and they should be told, but I think, believe it or not, in a weird way, Captain, that the civil rights stories, the slave stories, would have more resonance, greater resonance, if there were other things going on with black folk that were depicted cinematically to give it balance, so we can get the totality of the picture. But to me, maybe to other folk, where you start to get a little frazzled, maybe what's being seen drowns out when it's the only story that you're seeing. It's repeated. I just know it really hit me to see the same slave costuming. And, that's what slaves wore for that time period. I'm not expecting Armani, obviously. I mean, that's the way it was slavery. But it's just something about the visual, that visual sense of always seeing black folk that way. You've got to see the full – let's see the star uniform and the slave smock. Let's see the business costume and the slave smock. Let's see the flight costume going to, let's say, the Gary Buford story. See the whole thing. Let's see the NASA uniform. I mean, there are stories here. You know, the fact that what really compels you to 12 years a slave is he wasn't a slave. Well, that's another thing. Black folks weren't slaves to begin with. We're looking at it also from a different perspective also, Captain. We spoke about that, is that we're looking at this because he was not a slave, and he was westernized, living in the North, and then captured. But what's the difference between him being a westernized black person and being a black person in Africa and being captured? You were free in Africa also. It's just that this person was a musician. I believe he was a violinist or something to that effect. And he was westernized, living in the North, and he was captured. So that makes it more interesting for on a certain level. But if you look at it the way it's supposed to be looked at, black person, whatever your vocation was, you were free. You were always a free person until you were captured. That's the story. You know, I heard about a black automobile manufacturer that was competing with Henry Ford in the early 1900s. I believe it was C.L. Patterson. Let me look that up. But that story of a black man who put together his own automobile manufacturing business. Where's that story? Again, this is a story that occurred in the early 1900s in direct competition with Henry Ford. I find that fascinating that black folk, I don't know if we're that industrious. You know, I sent out this story to Sergio and all of our stalwart listeners, and Sergio comes back to me and says, you know, we were somewhat under the gun, referencing the captain. We had to be more industrious. We had to think huge. Maybe we were thinking more huge with apartheid going on, Captain. We had black baseball teams, for Christ's sake. Once we found out the white man's water was colder, what happened to those Negro leagues? What happened to a black man owning his own auto manufacturing plant? This is going on in the 1900s. It's 2013. These are stories besides slavery and slave smocks. That's it, Captain. I don't know. I see Q-Storm. Yeah, he says, Kevin Graveau, brother to my wife's best friend. I've met him, and he is huge. Yeah, he's a big guy. He's also doubled as a bouncer, I believe, in his early stages before he found show business, I guess while he was studying and crafting these characters. So I've got to reach out to Mr. Graveau also. I'd like to get him on the show because I want him to really go further into this notion of black folks needing to be in science fiction. I mean, that's kind of an obvious thing now. You know, we just can't be on this same, I'm going to say it again, folks, minstrel path. It's either minstrelsy, slavery, or the civil rights period. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that we've done. For Christ's sake, we put together a auto plant in the 1900s, competing with Henry Ford. You mean to tell me that's not worthy of cinematic depiction, Captain? What's going on? And then we'll move along.
Well, I think definitely it's definitely worthy. But again, as I said earlier, it all depends on who is putting out the product, controlling the product, and that's essentially what we get. Now, Steven Spielberg all of a sudden wants to come along and do this story. There you go. That's a whole other story. You see what happens now? But do you get the right depiction of the story? That's a whole other thing. It's a whole other debate. So we can go back and forth. Again, we need to be doing it. We need to be doing it. That's ultimately, at the end of the day, that's the reality of the situation. That's where we are. That's where we are. Where you are. It's just like listening to, okay, you have Jay-Z, which I say Jay-Z does good minstrel music. But if you have 13 people doing Jay-Z like music, Jay-Z-S type music, it becomes a bit redundant and damaging. But if you have, let's say, 3 or 4 Jay-Zs, then you have 4 or 5 people doing something. Let's say they rap about going to college. And then another 4 or 5 talk about getting their own business and things of that sort and being married and having kids. Now it becomes balanced. So when you listen to someone such as Jay-Z, it's entertaining. And then you listen to these other people, it's also entertaining, but as KRS-One would say, edutainment. So there you go. It's all about having the balance, and then you can enjoy everything a lot better. Back over to you, Sir Affleck.
Yeah, always trying to give a further clarification for our audience. Again, I was talking about, I think I said CL, CR, CR Patterson. And this gentleman, again, just to go quickly into this thing, because I find his story fascinating. This was a man born into slavery, was able to leave that horrifying event and set up a carriage-building business, Captain. And then, of course, you know what happens to carriages. That carriage-building business at the tail end of the 19th century, when going into the 20th century, he had a segue from carriage-building to an automated carriage-building business, hence the automobile business. So this was, from my understanding, I'm going to read this briefly, just so our audience, and we're going to move along. This is worthy of a cinematic effort. Some of the finest buggies made in the late 1800s came out of a small black-owned company in Ohio. Charles Rich Patterson's company later made motor vehicles and history by founding the country's only African-American-owned automobile factoring company. Damn it, I'm getting weary of seeing black folks in slave smocks when in the 1900s we were building cars, competing with Henry Ford. Now, you know what? Forget it. I'm not going to go any further than that. But you see, I'm getting emotional about this, Captain.
That's a very empowering story. It's a very empowering story. It's very powerful. It's extremely powerful. Just you reading it there is very empowering. It's extremely powerful. That's a Superman punch right there. Kryptonian. Black style, though. Okay,
Let me go to Q-Stone for a moment. Q-Stone says, D. Bird, I have to ask, why the vitriol over the movie by McQueen, but praise over Tarantino's Django Unchained? Well, I'll tell you what the deal is. It's just a matter of timing, to be honest with you. Now, I said I will support Steve McQueen because I appreciate what he is and what he's doing, and that this. Q-Stone, when you listen to what we say, there's a lot of nuance in what I'm talking about. I want to come off like I'm confusing or being hypocritical. I'm going to see 12 Years a Slave. It's a little bit different than the typical slavery movie because we are seeing this person as being educated, living in the North, a musician, and he was a fully enculturated, westernized black man in the, I guess, what, 17th century or 18th century, I should say. Early 19th century when this took place. So I can appreciate that. But at the same time, even with Django Unchained, we did see that we saw a revenge pick. I'm not above revenge. We saw the enemy and we attacked, and we saw black heroism, in a way. So I liked Django Unchained. It's okay. We did that. Now we're going to start seeing a rash of. I mean, are we going to see a rash of slavery films now? I know how U.S. commerce works. Is that instead of doing something unique, they continue to feed you the same old food. That's my concern. I'm going to see 12 Years a Slave. Oh, heck, I wanted to see it this weekend, but it will be for national release November 1st. But I want our audience to be fully aware that, you know, look at, make sure you are aware of the meme and try to combat it. That along with 12 Years a Slave, we should be seeing the C.R. Patterson story of the first black automobile manufacturing company in order for balance. And maybe, and just maybe, again, this is a nuanced statement, Q, maybe we will have, it will have greater resonance, 12 Years a Slave, to see that, sure, we came from slavery, but heck, we also built automobiles at a time that you didn't necessarily expect for black folk to build automobiles. Now, in the 21st century, we are learning how to build a better minstrel. That's my concern. You know, we just saw that the film, I think out there in L.A., The Preacher-themed reality show that was green-lighted. I mean, it doesn't stop.
Well, here's a bunch the thing. Of buffoons. Let me just add this in. I'm going to see 12 Years a Slave, but I didn't go see The Butler, and I will not go see The Butler. I did see Django, and I enjoyed Django. It's about choice, you know, and then there you go. That tells you, that says it all right there. It's what it is. It's just what it is.
Well,
Twelve Years a Slave is an important story. I don't think The Butler was at all. That's just my opinion. You might feel differently. And I think Django was rather empowering. That's what I thought about the movie, and I needed to see that. That's all. That's what it is. And whoever doesn't they can bite it.
We have a call. We're going to go to the call, and then we're going to discuss this deal with white pain versus black pain. I think that's an interesting thing that the HuffPost brought out. But, you know, listen, folks, said something very crucial. The key component is empowerment. We saw white asses getting whipped. Now, this is not to lambaste all white folk because we have white listeners and we understand, but we're talking about the enslaver, the white enslaver specifically. That, just like we saw, just like Tarantino masterfully did in Inglourious Basterds, Jewish folk were able to breathe because we saw that the villains were clear. And there was no dispute about the villains. Even in Django, there was dispute by some who wanted to say that, well, these weren't villains. They were villains. And he needed to be whipped and taken out, period. If you captured someone in the 21st century, we would expect that person, having been captured, would be expected to kill that person. Only black folk are not perceived to look at things that way. If someone took you from your home, you are allowed to take him out. You can't steal a person. So I thought the Django did something a little different with that genre. He did something a little different. You saw black heroism. You saw the black woman, an attractive black woman, being the damsel in distress. There was a lot more going on with that film. It wasn't the typical. Now, 12 Years of Slaves, I'm hearing that it's a horror show, that it's difficult to look at. It could be, I don't know, it could be more victimization. In Django, which was a fantasy, it was the black fantasy of, I'm going to get your ass. I got to say, plain and simple. Not necessarily Afro-nerdic talk, but that's what it was. A little bit different. But I don't want it to be a theme also of slavery being the backdrop for every film. Slavery, servitude. I have the Butler also, Captain, by nefarious means. I've yet to take it out. I can't. The Oracle, the producer of the show, my father, he saw it. He said, wasn't feeling it. A learned man, my father, the Oracle, and he said it. I have to pay close attention to what he tells me when he tells you things. He said, wasn't really comfortable. Bowing your head, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, wasn't feeling it. Very difficult to do that when a black man is in the White House. And we've seen the butler in the White House. I don't know. It's the reason why I haven't taken it out yet, Captain. Let's go to the phones, and then we're going to talk about black versus white pain, the latest HuffPost piece. 484, welcome to Africa featuring Captain Kirk. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, your thoughts.
Hey, Captain and D-Bird, this is Q-Storm.
Q, as always, man.
I was gritting my teeth debating if I should call in and get something started with you guys. But I suppose you addressed my query in the chat room. I just found it a little disconcerting at the face of it that, you know, and nothing that you have said do I disagree with. I just thought your timing was a little off kilter because although I enjoyed Django as well, I enjoyed it at a certain expense knowing that, you know, for Tarantino, even though it was a great film, for Tarantino, it was kind of, I saw it as kind of like a pet project, if you will. Him kind of having fun with a genre. And although it was a brilliant film, it is, I hate to sound tribal, it was a white director who some could perceive as just kind of putting a light spin on a very heavy topic. And he did it successfully, don't get me wrong. So along comes Steve McQueen, a filmmaker of note, who has gotten Chiwetel Ejiofor, I think, and a brilliant, excellent African actor of note. And so I want to withhold any judgment about this film, and I just feel like if the film is good on its own merits, let's just let it lie.
Well, you make a point.
Well, who dissed the film? No one dissed the film.
No, we're not really dissing it.
No one dissed the film.
Now, all you black folks, I suggest you get away from all these white folks. Not you, Stephen. You right where you belong. Cora, before you go, will you tell Miss Laura goodbye?
Do what now?
I said tell Miss Laura goodbye.
Bye, Miss Laura.
Come on, man. Come on. Forget it. Don't you dare disparage Django. Django's my hero.
No.
Forget it. Forget it. I have spoken. Django,
I'm not,
Clark Kent.
I'm not
Django,
Sean Renee, okay?
Django, Clark Kent, same person. Same person. I'm putting it out there right now. I'm just saying Django was a little different, Q. We have yet to see a film like that, and we could talk about, you know, we could talk about Spike Lee, and we could talk about all these folks who have a problem with it. But, listen, it's because of who Q, of the other Q, Quentin Tarantino, who he was, him being a radical white person, that and folks went out to see this movie. Since when would you expect to see a film about slavery make close to $500 million? Slavery is not palatable. He was able to make it somehow sell a film where white folks were clearly the enemy and got taken out. And the black guy rides out on a horse with his woman as a hero. Black folks aren't even doing that. Black folks are getting green-lighted for playing clownish preachers on the West Coast. I mean, come on. This is the season of your housewives, of your rappers, of your plaintiffs in front of a cartoon court, monosyllabic black folk, criminality on screen. But I mean, look what we see. We've seen butlers, rappers. No one can speak the King's English. It's a minstrel show. So if I see someone who's able to put some marks on white bottoms in cinema, we even see that in Roots, really. Roots was a little tame on it. I hope that 12 Years a Slave is not that tame. You know, I don't know. If I'm going to say
I would
like
just
Steve McQueen.
I would just say briefly, I want to throw this out there. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I don't necessarily disagree with you guys. I'm just saying that, you know, you're saying that Django portrayed a black man, a slave, as a hero, as a superhero almost. And so then you get into the philosophical debate, what defines a hero? Is a man who feeds his family through the worst periods of time for black people, who puts food on the table for his family by being a butler in the White House. Is he a hero? Is a man who survives 12 years of torture and indignation when he was born a free, when he's a free man, and survives that, is he a hero? I mean, it kind of reminds me of that whole thing back during the presidential election when I think it was Lawrence O'Donnell tried to cast shade on Herman Cain, who I don't support, but he tried to cast shade on Herman Cain for not being more involved with the civil rights movement and trying to equate that with him not being a hero. I don't know. So it, to me, it's like kind of shady ground. I understand what you guys are saying. I just had to throw that out there.
Listen, 12 years slave is supposed to be historical. So they say, right? That's right, right? The butler, somewhat, some people will say it's this, some people say it's that. Regardless of the fact, I don't want to see the butler. I don't want to see it. I don't want to see the black man dressing up as a butler, channeling Arrow, as Diggle said, I'm the black driver. I don't want to see that. I just don't want to see that.
Well, I'm glad they acknowledge that. At least they that's like a hidden story. They put that in there so you know, the audience, it's like the fourth wall being broken for you to say, I'm not really the driver. I'm your partner. But they had to say it.
Yes. Yes.
There's no milk. I appreciate that they didn't have any milk toast on that. This is my style right here.
I count six shots, nigga.
I count two guns, nigga. You said in 76 years on this plantation, you've seen all manner of shit done to niggas. But I noticed, you didn't mention kneecap.
Oh, God! Motherfucker! Desmond!
76 years, Steven. How many niggas you think you see come and go, huh? 7,000? 8,000? 9,000? 9,999? Every single word that came out of Calvin Candy's mouth was nothing but horseshit. But he was right about one thing. I am that one nigga in 10,000.
You motherfucker.
That's Afro Nerd and Captain Kirk and Daryl B taking out the minstrel. I appreciate that. That's what you're seeing, Q.
Wow.
That's the minstrel being taken out. We're gonna hog tie Lil Wayne. We're gonna hog tie all. We're gonna Drake. We're gonna hog tie all these minstrels and get rid of them. We might keep for some other thing.
So the butler, the character portrayed in the butler was a minstrel.
I don't know what to think about it. I don't know if it's a minstrel, but I know it's a common meme that needs to be deconstructed. It's a meme we've seen before. We saw it in 1939. Why we see it in 2013? We saw it in 1989 with Driving Miss Daisy. When is it going to stop? We got awards for it. You know, one thing that makes Sidney Poitier, really profound was that, I think, 1964 is when he won the Academy Award, Lilies in the Field. He just played a guy. He just played a guy, for Christ's sake. He was not a mister. I mean, we were more progressive at some point, maybe in the 60s. The man won an Academy Award for just playing a regular man. His ethnicity had nothing really to do with the storyline. But in 2013, we are so far removed from that guy. Something's wrong, gentlemen. That's all I'm saying. But Django, he gets a different award from me. I needed release. I'm sorry. And it's unfortunate that it took a white man to do it. But it is what it is. He gets props. I want him to do Black Panther, as you know. Put him on Black Panther. I want him to be the official black filmmaker. Or would you prefer?
Wow. Oh, man. Okay.
Well,
kind of like our first black president was Bill Clinton, right? Okay.
Well, listen. We, you know what it is? We talked about. Daryl brought this up. We have critiqued Obama's blackness more, or given him more grief for his blackness. And not any grief for Bill Clinton's quote-unquote blackness. We gave Bill Clinton a lease on his blackness, and we have yet to revoke it, really. See what happens when Hillary Clinton runs, when she runs. How many black folk will support her? When she starts to speak in a certain vernacular and get the churches going, hooping and hollering. Watch, see what happens. I mean, it is what it is. We have men in dresses. Do you want that? Again? That's what's out here. I'm being very clear about what I'm saying. I'm half in jest with Quentin, but Quentin seems to know how to do it. Where are the black filmmakers to do what we are? Are they going to give us minstrelsy? Some of the black filmmakers are giving us minstrelsy, Q. We got to admit that because it pays well. Minstrelsy pays quite well, and it has to stop.
Well, understood, and I know you guys want to move on, but I'll just say this. In all honesty, I did not see The Butler either for the same reasons probably you guys did not see it, but I'm not ready to throw aspersions on that character because in some people's mind, he was just as much of a hero as Django, and my minstrels are Lil Wayne and Waka Flocka, all the people you talk about, those are minstrels. To me, those are minstrels, and there's a huge difference between that and the character as portrayed in The Butler.
Listen, look who... You're talking about, like when I said that Quentin Tarantino could be our official black filmmaker. But look who are the black filmmakers. Lee Daniels, who gave you Precious, now Butler, and gave you Buster's Ball, and then you have Tyler Perry. Those are your black filmmakers. Now, I'm taking Steve McQueen out of it because I think he's a person of talent. But look when you do have a black man making a film, look what you get. Look what you're getting. It is what it is. It cannot be deconstructed. That's a problem. I think. Even the black men are giving you minstrels. The white man gave you a hero. These are the times we're living in. These are the times. Your greatest white rapper, I say jokingly, is Eminem, and your greatest golfer is Tiger Woods. This is bizarro land, I suspect. All right, Q, listen, we're going to go to the next topic. As always, continue to support us. Spread the word. And we will see 12 Years a Slave, and we will give our review. And I suspect it's going to be a good movie, but I just hope it's not victimization all the way through. That's all. I'm just concerned. All right.
Okay.
Let's go to actually something that you brought to my attention, Captain. I want you to take the reins on this. You sent this to me via email a few days ago. It was a Huffington Post piece that talked about how the media and I guess how the nation, how the culture perceives white pain and black pain. What are your thoughts about this? What are we talking about here?
Well, the article essentially was talking about, they did a scientific study. A recent study examining racial disparities, why people are more empathetic towards white people than black people when it comes to pain. And that pain can be anything, you know, emotional pain. It could be medical pain when they inject you with needles, any type of pain. Now, you see, what they found is that, you know, people are just essentially more empathetic towards white people. We know this. What happens when we see on TV when the pretty white girl, and even sometimes when she's not so pretty, she dies, she ends up in a tragic accident. The media and even some of you black people, you go ahead and said, oh, why did she have to die? Why did she have to go this way? Why did she have to go that way? Yeah, of course it's tragic. As human beings, you do not want to see anybody die. But when someone who you feel is supposed to die, everything is all right. If it's the thug or if it's even the black person, let's say it's the business black person. Now, the business black person, you may look at it and say, well, he's not supposed to die. He was highly educated. He had on a suit going to work. He makes a decent salary. He dies. It's not supposed to happen. But people in general are not as empathetic because black is just considered lower. And see, this is what goes on in the minds of the powers that be. Most of the time when you go to a doctor, it's white. Most of the time when you go to a lawyer, Not all the time. Not all the time. They're white. This is what's going on. So this is something that's rather interesting that you already know as black people. You know this as black people. But it's good to see it in a study that white supremacy runs deep, and also white supremacy has different levels, different tier levels within it. That's why the study is rather important. You know this already, black man. This is something you know already. But it's just good to see it in the study. Now, it was a short piece. It was nothing real long and drawn out in the Hutchinson Post. But it's just interesting to see. And you know this already. It's common knowledge if you're a black person. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, just to give more information to our audience, again, we're talking about the HuffPost or Huffington Post piece. It was dated October 17th of this month, obviously, and it's stemming from a study from the March issue of the American Journal of Public Health. And it reports that the research has found that at least two-thirds of the doctors now, if we even talk about pain, like you said, you talk about different types of pain, but we just talk about what's happening, the medical interpretation of pain, that the research has found that two-thirds of doctors harbored unconscious racial biases toward patients. So even the doctor that you go to unconsciously may or may not give you a certain level of medication based on your skin color. So they found that with black and brown folk, because the Latin folks are involved in this as well, that there's a perception even with children, that if a child comes in with a visibly pained, abdominal pain or what have you, that they may not even give you the correct amount of medication, or they will lessen back the medication because they liken you to being something different. I think it's almost an animalistic way of looking at you. In other words, animals to be able to deal with pain differently. You know, the reason why we're able to do all these experiments on monkeys and dogs and cats, because we don't really have a connection to their pain. Some of us do not have the connection to their pain. We don't see them as living beings. What makes it even more disparaging, Captain, is that we're talking about, it's one thing to perceive animals, which is still a horrible thing, but to perceive another human being because of the amount of melanin in their skin, that, well, you know, you're Hispanic, so you don't need the same amount of dosages that a white person would. And this is going on, some of it consciously, some of it unconsciously. This is very horrifying, but it's something that's pretty much new. We know about this. We know that when we see someone missing, when there's an Amber Alert, and there's a white female, white blonde female, mind you, because the captain also went into the gradation of whiteness. The gradation of whiteness to blackness, brownness to blackness. When you go down the line, being attractive, being fairer hued, having blondness, that is the maximum. The darker that person gets, even if you are in the white spectrum, if you're have more of a swarthy complexion, if you're olive complected with darker hair, you may not be perceived as wholesale attractive. Even that plays a role, and even another white person who's not quite white enough, not getting their due. Somehow we don't seem to care, the public at large, and listen. These perceptions, Captain, really permeate throughout all ethnicities, that even black folk, even brown folk feel less pained about their own at times. I don't know if that dynamic was brought into this as well. This, you know, this white supremacy or racism has a duality to it. You know, we talked about the Stockholm Syndrome. Some of that permeates in this discussion. That we talk about this incessantly, Captain, that I think that there's an element in our culture, in black culture, an element that has it where we've grown somewhat comfortable with failure and somewhat comfortable with black pain. Because the bodies are mounting. The body bags are being filled. You look at what's happening in Chi-Town, shouting out Sergio and, of course, our friend Kim out there in Chirac, the body count is pretty large. And you would think that it would be so unbearable that we would be called to move. But I think on some level, I want you to chime in on this, Captain, on some level I think it can be perceived tribally that we have become comfortable with a certain level of malaise. Because if we were uncomfortable, we would be making greater strides in trying to get rid of it. We were uncomfortable in the 50s and 60s with being having second-class citizenship. So you had young folk that were going to the lunch counters, that were dealing with the dogs and the hoses. They were compelled to do something. Where's that compulsion to do something internally? So we can talk about whites having less empathy, but there's an element also of blacks having less empathy for black pain. Black folks had pain when Princess Diana was killed. We saw them. We saw a black presence when the Princess of England was killed in an accident. We saw a black presence. We felt their pain. But when you ask, when there's a call for a turnaround, when there's a call for a turnaround, we don't quite get it, but we're also not giving it also with ourselves. I want you to talk about that also, Captain. Isn't there also a duality to that, that maybe black folks should have more concern?
Well, it's
with
huge.
Our own?
It's definitely huge. Black people seem to have a huge tolerance for pain when it's a black and black type of situation inflicting the pain on their situation. But the tolerance for pain gets rather low when they believe, not a subliminal, not an unconscious, when it's a direct assault in pain from white people, when it's a direct, not a subliminal, because there's always unconscious subliminal things going on from the powers that be going through the black community. Not those. The controlling of your mind directly, indirectly, which affects you directly. Not those. The direct assaults from the white community on the black community, we have a low tolerance for pain. Then you begin to somehow organize. Now, somehow, you could have a low tolerance for the other things that's happening and recruit all those resources that you seem to be able to recruit when there's a direct assault from the powers that be. Then we'd be on our way. You know, it's right there. Then we'd be on our way. So that's
what's
happening.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. I mean, that is a caveat to what I just said, what you just said. Is that when it's a direct thing that you can't escape, when it's more, it's more emotion-based or something, but the indirect assaults that are occurring with black folk, like going to doctors and this medication deal with black and brown folk that all of a sudden children now, they're not perceiving children. I mean, listen, I saw this, because this is the Afternoon Show, I saw this with the Hunger Games, believe it or not. First we saw that... The book was clearly written with a potential for black and brown representation. The characters were described as such. And somehow, some of the white readership bypassed what was written, and they were very, young people now, very clear about their anger about having these black characters in their precious white book.
White supremacy.
When one of the black characters, a young black girl in the movie, when she was killed, and I saw the movie and I was affected. I would have been affected if it was a white girl that was killed. A child especially. When the Sandy Hook thing went down, I remember when it was going down in progress. I was affected. I'm not very comfortable in trying to, trying to make distinctions with humanity. A human being is a human being. However, I saw quite a few tweets, quite a few blog postings, quite a few chat rooms that when the black girl died cinematically, and it was a very emotional, tragic scene, those who were self-described white people said, I didn't feel anything when the black girl died. I didn't care. Wow. Incredible. So I saw that with the Hunger Games as a fantasy, that you had all these people tweeting some horrific things, and one of them was the little girl that was killed tragically on film. The white viewers, some of them, said, didn't feel anything. There you go, Captain. There you go. I mean, that says it all. Listen, folks, we got about a minute. This is how it rolls on Grindhouse. Unfortunately, we have a two-hour show, and yet it just doesn't feel like it's enough time. We've got to get more time, Captain. We've got to work that out, because we even talk about the McDonald's worker that confronted the CEO. There's so much we did not discuss. Our apologies. We will reconvene on Wednesday, folks, for the Midweek in Review show. It is what it is. Anything else about this topic, Captain, before we get on up out of here?
No, I think we summed it up. We summed it up.
We will see, once again, folks, we will see 12 Years a Slave, because I am excited about it. But I'm measured with it. I have a measured excitement. You will see me lose my mind if we ever see a Black Panther superhero film come to fruition. Then you will see me act the fool. But a slavery film, after we've seen so many, you know, unless there are slaves that are weaponized and kicking ass, shouting out the overture, someone like that. We haven't seen that on film. See, that's what, Captain, doesn't that put my point? The slave revolts we don't see. Where's the Nat Turner film? You know, the victim films we see. Let's show some slaves kicking some ass. Then you'll get me excited. I'm just saying. But I will see it. I will see it. Okay, folks. Going out, this is, give me some James Brown, Funky President. See you on Wednesday.
Funky down. Nasty.
Hey, listen to the man.
Rap Godfather.
Payback.
Cold blooded.
People, people, gotta get over before we go under.
Hey, listen to the man.
Red.
Yeah.